This is a special podcast produced for the 26th Annual Healthcare Marketing and Physician Strategy Summit, HMPS, October 6th through the 8th in Aventura, Florida, as we speak with session presenters and keynote speakers. I'm Bill Klaproth. With me is Dr. Kevin Fickinger, President, Creo Strategic Solutions, and board member of the Carol Emmett Foundation, and Anne McCune, CEO of the Carol Emmett Foundation. Their session, Women in Healthcare, How Finding a Mentor, or Even Better, a Sponsor, Can Accelerate Your Career. Kevin and Anne, welcome, and thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. So women are significantly underrepresented in senior executive and board positions in healthcare. We certainly know this, and we know that we need more women leaders in healthcare. But why is this a pressing issue now?
It's very important now because we are at a very important transition point in healthcare, from my perspective. In that, at the present time, healthcare represents about 19% of the gross domestic product of the United States. There is real need to transition from the traditional fee-for-service model to more of a value-based model. And the value-based model requires that we move towards operating more effectively as teams. And it has been shown very clearly from the literature, from surveys that have been done, et cetera, that women in particular are better and more inclusive in their leadership style around team building and leadership and problem solving and decision making that really involves the team, if you will. To say nothing about the fact that we've got 70 some percent of all of the healthcare providers across the board are women, and only 13% of the hospital CEOs are women, and maybe 25, 30% of the C-suite are women. So we've got a real disproportionate number of women who moved into leadership roles. So I think it's an issue that really demands that we pay attention to it and try to figure out how we can be more effective at bringing women into major leadership roles within the healthcare industry.
Yeah, that just seems to make sense, the disparity between the C-suite, right, and the other women that are in healthcare. And like you said, women certainly are better and more inclusive when it comes to team building. So, Anne, let me ask you then. So then what are the trends when it comes to the talent pipeline for women, and how does that relate to healthcare?
Thank you again, Bill, for the opportunity. I wanted to sort of preface my comments on the trends to talk a little bit about the Carol Emmett Foundation. We're a national nonprofit dedicated to achieving fully inclusive gender equity in healthcare leadership and governance. And we do it through two major initiatives. One is a fellowship, which is an individual type program where organizations and we have scholarships sponsor individuals to engage. And then we've got a learning community called the Equity Collaborative. And the Equity Collaborative is a self-driven learning community. It's got 15 membership organizations. Really, the goal of that is to address some of the structural and cultural differences and issues within the organizations that are prohibiting both women and persons of color their advancement career-wise. So we've partnered with McKinsey, who has been analyzing since 2015 women in the workplace in the U.S. across all sort of industry sectors. And since 2015, McKinsey's seen very marginal progress in the representation of women in the corporate pipeline. And that means looking at where they begin in entry-level positions up through the C-suite. And so across all industries, we saw about 17% of all women in the C-suite nationally. At 2020, it rose to 21%. So progress, but really when organizations want to have 50% of women in the C-suite, you're seeing this incremental process, progress being quite slow. On the healthcare side, it's a little bit different, and it's interesting because women account for 66% of all entry healthcare employees that come into an organization, where industry-wise, they're around 47%. And as they move to the C-suite, the share of women declines in more senior roles, moving to about 30% are in the C-suite now, where, as we've talked about, overall in the industry, it's around 21%. It's still disproportionate to what I think the expectations are for organizations to be more highly functional, but at least it's some progress.
Yeah, that is good. And when we talk about the pipeline, I would imagine the challenges to women of color are even greater. Is that true, Anne? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's especially when you want to be looking at physicians. When a patient goes out to seek medical advice and medical care, they certainly want to have someone who sort of looks and represents them. And the number of men and women of color who are in health, who are in medicine, are there, but it's not proportionate to the diversity in our overall population. And we've just seen a high level of underrepresentation of women and women of color in senior management positions. And the issues are not something that can say, do we solve this by attrition of people moving out of those positions and replacing them with women or persons of color? That's not going to happen. They're going to have to be specific planning and specific efforts that will help fill that gender and racial gap.
That makes sense. And then I'm thinking, Kevin, the pandemic, there had to be repercussions as well to everything that we're talking about today. Women in leadership roles, women in healthcare, the challenges that women of color face. How did the pandemic affect all of this, of the workforce today?
Well, the pandemic has clearly had a massive impact on the way we do our work. I mean, initially, the move towards telecommuting really offered increased productivity. And we saw that across all industries. But we quickly learned that the home office is not exactly the quiet place where you can get a lot of work done. Matter of fact, one of the issues that my wife and I face, we're both professionals, is that we have a small house that we live in. We have difficulty when we're both on conference calls with the noise from each call seeping over into the others. So there are some issues that have evolved around how to do our work. And I would also say that the other problem that we've really realized is that what I would characterize as the work-home-life balance has really gotten out of kilter, because there are no limits on when you can contact somebody at, quote, work, which is often at home. I find that my days often start at 7 o'clock in the morning and end at 10 o'clock at night, and that's not uncommon in a professional life. Those issues have been compounded for both men and women. Men, from surveys that have been done, for example, by Forbes, perceive that the female partner has contributed about 45% of the care in the home. Women, on the other hand, perceive that men have contributed about 29%. So there's a disparity that exists. But that disparity is less than it was in previous surveys. So the point is that we're really seeing a significant change, I think, in how men and women who are both engaged in professional careers and in pursuing work are engaging with one another, with fathers being more involved in childcare. In some respects, I look back on my life, I was hardly at home. I was traveling all the time for 25, 30 years, where I would come home on Friday evening and I'd leave on Monday morning. And I wasn't around. I didn't participate in developing my children the way I retrospectively look back and say, gosh, I wish I shoulda, coulda, woulda. So there's all of those issues come into play. But the pandemic has leveled the playing field when it comes to work-life balance. It's put it on the table. And I think that senior leaders within organizations really need to take the mask off of work-life overlap and try to determine how they can support their employees in this balance issue and take advantage of leave programs, for example, and other services that could support people that are working in environments where they have both work at home and at work.
Right. The pandemic certainly disrupted just about every aspect of life. That's for sure.
I was just going to add because I think there are two major sort of terms that are out there, and I think Kevin alluded to them. One is the she session, and this is the departure of over 2.5 million women from the workforce during the pandemic, which caused a great brain drain across a lot of industries, but including healthcare. And part of the reasons for this were really whether women were sandwiched between caring for elderly parents or educating their children or other circumstances. They've made the decision to stay home, at least for now, to stabilize and to focus on their family. That has had a big impact on women's career development, especially with this break. I mean, to the comment to say, if somebody takes a year break away and starts to recruit, is this going to set them back on a career trajectory? I do mention that because women sort of unequally have left the workforce, whether it's tentatively or permanently, it's a factor to consider.
Right. The great brain drain, as you called it. So, Anne, as we talk about, you mentioned career development, and we've been talking about getting more women into the pipeline, into healthcare, and up the leadership ladder, if you will, into leadership positions. Can you tell us about sponsorship? What is that? And is that a way to help promote women?
You're going to find that I'm pretty passionate about sponsorship because it is the practice of seeking out talented junior people and advocating for opportunities to demonstrate their leadership. What this really means is having you as a leader to sponsor a protege, you're going at risk to take on this person and to advocate for them. Sponsorship has been advanced. It's been demonstrated that it's advanced leadership through history, but it's been largely limited to white men in higher socioeconomic levels. And so today, as we really consider sponsorship, we need to be going to step back and say, why has it been? Because people generally move to sponsor somebody who looks like them, who comes from the same background like them, and who feels safe. The phrase of birds of a feather flock together, we get close to those who we are near. We've seen that. So if we're going to really take the role of sponsorship and be committed to a more just and equitable society, we've got to really advocate for sponsorship of more marginalized, whether it's gender or race. It's going to be an important activity. So how do we bring to the attention of leadership in an organization those talented people and give them opportunities to contribute? That's the real question. Our equity collaborative at the Carol Emmett Foundation is really conscious that unless specific, focused, and energetic practices and policies and culture changes around sponsorship take place and are made a priority, we will not see organizational leadership benefiting from diverse perspectives and sponsorship really working across all races and genders.
Yeah, it does play an important role. So thank you for saying that and how sponsorship needs to take hold among women as well. As you say, basically it's been for white men in the past. So time for that to start changing, that's for sure. So we hear about sponsorship and then we also hear about mentorship. So Kevin, what is then mentorship?
Mentorship really is, from my perspective, is really a very proactive engagement with an individual in helping them to not only actively traverse their career, but also to consider what their career is all about and to have a sense of direction, a sense of focus. Mentors really offer advice and support on an irregular basis, like when it's needed in the moment. Mentors can provide support. I think it's also inclusive of both not just formal discussions, but also informal conversations. I met with one of my mentees here last week, who is a major leader in government who is moving into the private sector. And we had a very long conversation around what does it mean to go from a government role into a private role and how does that transition occur and what are the things that I've learned about my experience in the private sector that need to be applied or considered by this individual who's very prominent, very skilled, very capable, but has been in a different environment. So it's really helping them to look at their skills, to look at their qualities, their confidence level, and helping them to craft a career vision. I have a number of individuals that I've had the opportunity to mentor over the years, and one of the most exciting parts from my perspective is helping them to craft their vision. I know that it's something that my mentor did for me. As a matter of fact, my mentor is 87 years old. He and I still talk on about an every other week basis, and he's still giving me advice, and I find that to be a wonderful experience. I think the other thing that mentors do is that they also increase visibility, share about the unwritten rules of getting along and moving forward in an organization.
Right. So then, Kevin, what is the relationship between mentoring and sponsoring?
From my perspective, a sponsor is somebody who really is active in promoting an individual, but it's more of a step away, if you will, from the person. They're active versus a mentor is very proactive, where you're almost engaged in sort of a day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis in helping them to think about their career, about where they're going, about what they're doing. And really, in some cases, as a mentor, being across, helping them to think about the cross-fertilization between their personal life and their professional life. And a mentor is really a part of the family, if you will, versus a sponsor is somebody that is helping you to get known, to be present, to be shown within your professional roles. I don't know. Anne, what are your thoughts on that?
I view sponsorship as more skin in the game. As I mentioned before, I think it's a senior executive sort of taking risk in a way to publicly, within an organization, actively promote their protege. And that may be inviting them into the boardroom, sharing important information that can help them advance and giving them opportunities, whether it's taking on projects or interim roles to prove themselves and to have that support. There's been some research around mentoring and sponsoring, and mentoring is very important, I think, to Kevin's point, that it's having that relationship with someone that can help advise you in the steps of growth along the way. But we found that women more than men have mentors. In some of the cases, even by having a mentor, they're not getting promoted. So this is where I think the role of the sponsor comes in, is really recognizing that individual and promoting that individual to gain as much professional growth as possible.
Like you say, you have more skin in the game. It's a more active role of trying to help that person up the ladder into bigger and better positions. You're really in it together with that person, trying to pull that person up. That's kind of the way I look at it. So then let me ask you this then, Kevin, what is the process of discovery?
I think the process of discovery involves a number of different functions, if you will. First of all, a sponsor needs to discover you. And so through that, how do you get a sponsor to discover you? Well, one of the things you have to do is you have to take on stretch assignments. You have to be able to raise your hand and say, hey, I'm here. I'm willing to take on this particular role or engage in this set of tasks. I'm willing to help consider how we're going to reorganize. I'm going to lead a task force and write a special report. And I'm going to really offer myself up as an individual that's part of the team. As you engage in those activities, to be able to very clearly differentiate your skills compared to the skills of others or your peers that are involved in working with you. And I would say asking for feedback, that's an important part. I think, unfortunately, women haven't traditionally gotten a lot of good feedback, particularly from males. They might from women. Anne would be in a better position to comment on that one. But at least from my perspective, I don't think my male counterparts have been very good, if you will, at providing effective feedback for the women colleagues that are up-and-comers, if you will.
Yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on that, Anne.
I just think feedback in general is a problem. I think generally professionals are uncomfortable in providing constructive feedback to others. They're always able to provide praise, but I think it's a situation in general that I think we as an industry have to really think about how to provide that, have that crucial conversation and to provide that feedback. I think to Kevin's point, men are also uncomfortable, and the Me Too movement in the last couple of years hasn't helped it either, because I think there is more of a fear, I think, whether it's a man or a woman in providing that feedback, that context of that feedback may be interpreted in the wrong way, leading to other or greater issues. And so I think it's just avoided at this point. And unfortunately, it's a successful team and a successful organization are those that feel that they've got the psychological safety and the space to be able to provide the kind of feedback that can permit great progress moving forward.
Right. So great progress moving forward, you think of leaders. So let's talk about leadership and purpose. Kevin, let me start with you.
I think that this is a core problem for a lot of individuals, regardless of whether they're men or women, understanding their role, their capabilities, and what they're all about in terms of leadership and purpose. There's a real difference between having a career path and working within an organization that takes you down a series of different roles over time, and having a career purpose. And I think too many leaders really have not spent sufficient time talking to themselves, having a personal conversation around what is my purpose? What do I, at the end of the day, want to do with my life? And if you're clear about that, you can be a very effective leader. You will contribute in ways that are not purposeful necessarily. They're just part of your ambiance. They're part of who you are. So for example, and I use myself as an example, just to provide a metaphor. My purpose is very simple. It is to make healthcare better. I defined that purpose about 40 years ago. And so everything I look at, all the organizations that I've worked in, all of the positions that I've held, have always come back to answering the question, does it help me to make healthcare better? That's purpose. Versus path, which is, I've worked in large healthcare systems, I've worked in startups, I've done this, I've done that, I've done telehealth, I've done, you know, all sorts of different things, different activities. But my purpose has always been, does it help to make healthcare better? And I think that too many leaders have not really engaged in a healthy conversation with themselves around what their purpose is all about.
I think managers manage, but leaders lead. And I think a lot of time people think it's all about the duties that they have to perform versus the people they have to inspire. We have to sort of step back and really focus on what we can do to advance leaders. Many people take on high-level jobs that include a great amount of risk and a great amount of conflict. And in order to take those jobs, you've got to accept the responsibility that you're going to be paid in order to really lead through and not just manage and check the boxes, but really lead and lead purposefully. And so I think it's really taking the time to really focus on what does a leader need to support their confidence, their curiosity, you know, and their relationships.
Yeah, really good thoughts. Thank you for those. And then, Anne, part of this, too, is networking, too. Tell us about the power of networks. Give us your thoughts on that.
Sure. When you think about what you need in order to navigate this industry, you cannot be on an island. You have got to be within a community. And research over the years has talked about the 6 degrees of separation, where they've gone through various examples of how many contacts does it take for passing a piece of paper to one person. And what they've found in various studies, it's that those 6 degrees of separation. I believe in healthcare, it's about like 1.5. And so in a world, if you are an extraordinary leader and a strong leader, you're not standing alone. You know, it's not about the me, it's about the we. It's also not about who you know, it's who knows you. being known and having a community of or a network of peers is something that's very important. Professional associations provide that, just as the group that we're speaking with in Miami is that it's a network of individuals that need one another to be able to advance their own agendas and to have that support, to learn from each other, and to, I think, advance and support one another in their advancement.
Yeah, I think that's really good. It's not who you know, it's who knows you a lot of the time. So that's so true.
I think there's one other element that I'd like to add, if I could, and that is, I think a network is also important in two elements. One is that having a network that is diverse, that is not sort of unidimensional, if you will. For example, the network I belong to includes individuals that are in the insurance industry, they're in venture firms, they're in healthcare delivery, they're on the physician side, they're on the healthcare system side, just a whole variety of individuals. And I think that, so variety is important. Second issue that I think is important as you think about your network is, who are the individuals that I can be vulnerable with, that I can share my anxieties, my concerns, and test them out so that I can become more effective in the organizations that I'm responsible for? So vulnerability and susceptibility.
Yeah, another really good point. Well, thank you both for your time. As we wrap up, I just want to quickly get some final thoughts from you and anything else to add about women and healthcare.
Just really one other final comment about the power of the network is, we all have a responsibility to reach out to others to include them. And it's really taking the steps of not just taking those who you know and you're comfortable with, who look like you and who act like you, but really looking for the quieter leaders and maybe those that are, whether they're introverted or they aren't sort of traveling in the same circles as you, you know, take the time to really invite them into your network and be inclusive. Having the basis of the network will open the doors for perhaps greater mentorship and sponsorship, which we believe really helps to support the trajectory and the success of leaders and women in healthcare.
Yeah, really good thoughts. And again, as we wrap up, Kevin, any final thoughts from you? Anything you'd like to add about women in healthcare?
Yeah, I'd like to circle back to the very beginning, which is, I think given the challenges that are facing healthcare, and the fact that women have different styles, different abilities that they bring to the table, that it's going to be important for us to really foster and support the development of women leaders and to really bring them into the fold in a very full and robust way, because we need their modeling, we need their approach, we need their sensitivities that are often missing in a male-only environment.
Absolutely, 100% true on that. Well, Kevin and Anne, thank you so much for your time today. This has really been informative, and we look forward to learning more, as I know you'll go into all of these topics and thoughts more in depth during the session. So thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
And once again, that's Dr. Kevin Fickenscher and Anne McCune. And for more information and to register for the 26th Annual Healthcare Marketing and Physician Strategy Summit, please visit healthcarestrategy.com/summit. That's healthcarestrategy.com/summit. Thanks for listening.